Congratulations. You've made an excellent life choice today. You're displaying strong character and good taste in tuning into this infotainment web zone. We're poorly informed, highly opinionated, and hold no topic off limits. This is Idiots Discuss the Universe.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Spencer.
And we've got a pretty special show for you tonight. I guess it's tonight here. You can be listening to it whenever. But
it's tonight here.
It's tonight. We're kind of doing a late night session, a little bit out of our normal routine.
Like it.
Yeah,
I like it.
I like it. I like it too.
It makes me feel like we're more like secret podcasters.
Right.
Under the moonlight in a basement.
It feels like that old movie AM Radio. But I guess that the guy gets shot at the end of that.
Oh,
but
shit.
It's that Oliver Stone movie that no one's seen, but it's like totally it's a really good movie.
It's good
about
one.
That shock jock in Denver that got killed, and I can't remember who killed him, but I think it was white supremacists.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
It's a pretty great movie.
Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
And shit.
It was extremely topical at the time, and it probably still is to some degree. I mean, I haven't seen it in 15 years, but I mean, I remember it fondly. Anyway, back on topic.
Back on track.
We are going to do a biography podcast tonight.
I'm excited for this one.
Yeah. This is a guy that I'd known about him forever. I mean, Pythagoras.
Yeah.
Is who I love we're gonna how, do, right?
For some reason, calling him like a guy just seems so
And that's kind of one of the things that I want to kind of talk about.
Yeah. Well, for sure. I think, I was looking up, I did a little side research today.
Okay.
And there was a lot. Because at first I was like, oh, yeah, well, the guy from, like, what, the Triangle Theorem? Like, why are we talking about this guy? You know
right.
what I mean? And then I dug deeper. I was like, oh, shit.
It's amazing.
This is right up my alley. Craig
yeah.
picked, like, the most ballinist of the classical Greek.
Or maybe not. You know, I mean, it's one of those,
right.
he's one of those guys that, like...
There's a lot of debate. I did see a lot of debate.
They're like these
him.
Forefathers of our civilization. There's, like, Moses and right. Buddha. And
you think Buddha's a forefather of ours?
Of general, like, human civilization.
Okay, sure.
I would say he's one of them.
Yeah.
You know, Moses, Socrates, Plato, Homer.
What about Jesus, yo?
Hammurabi. I mean, later on, Jesus. But, like, of that core group, that way back, like, you know, when
we were
just starting these religions that have been, you know... Pythagoras is right in there with him. You know, I mean, that's that same... He's like 100 years after, they think, Plato. Not Plato, but 100 years after Homer lived. And well before Plato lived.
Oh, so he was before Plato.
He was before Plato. Yeah.
And Aristotle.
They never met. Aristotle.
Do you know the order? Because I know it went like Plato,
basically.
Aristotle, then... Or wait.
It was Socrates and... Plato was under Socrates.
Gotcha.
And Plato established the university in Athens, believe in Athens. And he taught Aristotle, who then taught Alexander the Great.
Right.
Okay, so Alexander the Great was like 2nd century and 1st century BC, I believe.
Okay.
Pythagoras is in the 6th century BC. And I always think it's interesting, like, if you're going to talk about a person, kind of talk about the world, like, other things that are kind of going on in the world at that same time. So I kind of made a little bit of a list of, like, some other people that were living at the time and some things that were just kind of going on.
Yeah, what were the hot-button issues at the time?
Well, there were several. Nebuchadnezzar taking Jerusalem was a big one. This was kind of the period of one of the Jewish captivity. Daniel... in the lion's den, if you know of him, he is a contemporary with Pythagoras as far as like biblical timeline and all that other stuff.
Damn.
As was Aesop of the Aesop Fables.
Okay.
Sun Tzu of the Art of War.
No way.
Was alive at the same time.
Whoa.
Confucius, Zoroaster. If you're familiar with Zoroaster, northern Iran,
sure.
the current day, or northern Iran.
That was a guy.
He was a prophet. Yeah, okay. He was kind of the first to do that duality of good and bad in religion, and
right.
highly influential. Buddha was also alive in India at this time.
Damn.
Solon, I don't know if you've
I've never heard of that.
Famous Greek statesman. Periander, also another Greek guy. Cyrus the Great, emperor of Persia, as is Darius, who, you know, through 300 and all that sort of stuff, we know of his son. But Darius was alive at this time. Yeah, so generally, lots going on. It was kind of this high point. Things kind of went over the edge and kind of disintegrated in the next 100 years towards the end of Pythagoras' life. He's born on the island of Samos to a jeweler or an engraver of jewels or something like that.
Some guy worked with precious stones.
Right,
of some
right.
sort.
And there's just so little known of him compared to, say, a Homer or Moses or
right.
Hammurabi or, like, any of these people. They have, like, their texts left from them. With Pythagoras, you know, there's nothing left other than what other people have reported about his life.
Right.
And different things that sprang up because he was well-remembered.
That's one thing I noticed when I was looking just on the internet about him was that almost every tidbit was up for debate in some form or another, or contested.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, he
may have done none of the things that we give him credit for. I mean, that's absolutely a possibility. And a lot of scholars will come right out and say that everything that he is attributed to has been proven to have been found other things. But there's a reason, I think, behind this. And none of this has been proven. But with a wealthy father on an island in Greece, he tended to travel a lot more than a normal person would. And at the same time, he was in a family that had a keen interest on the mystery religions. And the mystery religions, if you're not familiar with that, was a depository of ancient knowledge. A lot of times the secrets that would be revealed in these cults and religions would a lot of times be mathematical, for example, and different insights to how the world worked that had been passed down through these, you know, priestly circles in this esoteric tradition that were not common knowledge, because the common man at that time wouldn't have really appreciated it,
right.
even in the first place. But I think that Pythagoras was born into a family that did indeed appreciate that sort of thing. And he was initiated into the cult of Zoroaster, they think, first, and traveled with his father as a young man throughout the Greek world. And this is where things kind of start to get really wild.
Sure.
For sure, I mean, almost for sure, he went to Egypt and studied maths and different parts of religion and developed a lot of his own personal teachings. They can see a lot of religious borrowing from various Egyptian traditions. And that was at the very end of the last great period of the pharaohs. It was the end. I mean, it wasn't yet Alexander coming and taking over Egypt, but it was really like one of the last hurrahs of the...
They were starting to lose their luster.
Absolutely. They had, in a lot of ways. Egypt's a whole other series of episodes, probably.
Sure.
But at that period of time, they were kind of at a height when he was alive and when he visited. And they think that he was initiated into several of the mystery religions down there and garnered a lot of learning. And that's kind of what he was a gatherer of information. And he created a synthesis. One thing that we do know that he did create was the term philosopher, where he put that love of knowledge together. And all of this learning, the purpose that he eventually arrived at for all of this stuff that he had been doing his whole life, was to put it all together into one comprehensive understanding of the universe. Philosophy, that time, that was just what it was called.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of rumors. He got all the way to India, some people say, and that the India mystics had a name for him because he was so wise, and that he lived in Sumeria, and it's all sorts of stuff that really, like, it's almost like Alexander. If Alexander would have done everything that's attributed to him, he would have been 180 years old, you know, and he only lived to be like 24. But we know
Did he really?
24, 25,
wow,
something like that.
That just makes me feel like such a piece of shit.
Oh, I mean, Alexander, yeah, you just can't. You just can't. But I mean, you weren't born the son of the king of Macedonia either.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's just crazy to think about. And how we have, you know, 30-year-olds nowadays who are like, ugh, adulting.
Yeah.
Adulting. Yeah, well, Alexander the Great, he was 5 years younger than you, and he had conquered half the world. How does that feel?
It's
not good.
Not good.
No.
Not good. But the opportunity's different, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
The world was like a quarter of what it is now, I guess. I mean, obviously there's other people around, but the inhabitable world was this little, like, chunk around the Mediterranean, I guess.
Well, the phalanx is pretty well known. You know, there's a lot of defenses to that now. the cavalry, the secret cavalry charge is less effective to machine gun fire.
No, he is right. That's a classic right place, right time kind of a thing.
Right, yeah. A lot of things fell in. It was amazing. Yeah. You know, there are a few people in history that, like, things just really clicked.
It really
him,
just
you
lined
know?
And, up.
And he was one of those that it really clicked for him. And he was there to really, like, just, he almost expected it. That was the amazing thing about it. But anyway, back to the Greek at hand, Pythagoras. Mm-hmm. We don't really know where he traveled or where he stole all of his ideas from, but he was back on the island of Samos after the death of his father at the age of 36 or somewhere right around that age.
Okay.
There is even this wild report that he was captured by Nebuchadnezzar when Egypt was sacked, and he was taken to Babylon and made a slave, but he again stood out because of his intense intellect and was put to work working for Babylon for a while until they freed him, and then he came back. So really the moral of the story after all this research is that nobody really knows anything about, like, when or where or what he did at any point. That's staggering to
we
think.
Might as well, we can just, like, make shit up at this point.
It is
like
almost at the point that we would be entering a long tradition of people just making shit up.
Wow.
There's the story of Apollo, the god Apollo, giving Pythagoras a magic arrow. I'm not exactly sure what the magic arrow did, but it really assisted Pythagoras in coming up with a lot of the stuff that he did and finding. I don't know exactly.
People are taking some creative license here.
Absolutely. We'll talk a little bit how that happened at after we kind of finish up with his life.
His story.
But things kind of firm up, and a lot of the stories agree that he got back to Samos. He hated it. It was corrupt. He was really had this ideal idea in his brain of going home, and it was just an awful place, and he decided that it was time to leave. So he left, and he went to Italy, which wasn't Italy at that time, but it was the very southern tip of the boot where he went, a place called Cronin. That's where he started his school of Pythagoreanism, more of a cult.
Did he name it after himself, or is that just what people nowadays
call it? That I don't know. That's what people nowadays call it. I don't know that he. I think it would be like a school of philosophy,
right?
You know, that's the thing that he was promoting at that time. The school. He was very exclusionary and kind of a jackass. It sounds like
really.
And to get into his school, it was a wild group of standards and hurdles that you had to pass. Vow of silence for 3 years.
What?
No eating of meat. And at that time, like, no eating of meat was no eating of beans. No wearing of animals.
I saw that.
Animals.
What's with the bean thing?
I don't really know about the bean thing, but the bean thing is too up. I don't know. I'm not exactly
He's
sure.
Like, one cannot think well if one is farting all the time.
It's like this anti-protein diet is really what it looks like.
Weird.
So There's even a story that he died of starvation because all he would eat was sea cucumbers at the end of his life.
Ew.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's not even the good kind of cucumber.
Yeah, it's
the shitty kind.
It's just gross. and I've got to take back what I said earlier. He was not born in 530. He was born in 570. Okay. I always get like my BCs and my ADs, but
yeah,
it's 570.
I can. That always confuses me.
Because he was not. Never mind. Oh, we'll talk about when he dies. Anyway, Croton gets married. I mean, he's kind of an older guy, like 40-something. That's pretty old for mm-hmm. this time. Gets married there, has some, you know, really kind of gathers some followers. Even with all these strict requirements, people are starting to flock to Croton and
oh, yeah.
follow.
I bet people were into that.
Right.
As far as, like, you know, when you put those restrictions on something, it almost makes it more desirable.
Oh, I think so.
You know,
it makes it more forbidden. And I think there were lots of hangers-on and a lot of people that really wanted to emulate the lifestyle, but that weren't in the school itself,
right.
I think. But he promoted a lot of really like ideas that are still stuck with Western civilization and in the world since. Like, the soul is immortal is one of the main things that he was a proponent of. And he believed in reincarnation. Vegetarian diet, of course. The no-eating beans, which we discussed, that has, you know, I don't have that any idea of what that means. He also believed that music and athletics were the key to breaking into this mindset that you needed to cultivate this higher being that he felt that you would eventually get to.
Yeah.
So the athletic thing was, you know, pretty stringent. They were, you know, the Greeks were pretty hardcore about all that sort of stuff, but I guess that there was quite a bit of athletic exercise, and again, music was like something that he held. Music and poetry, which at that time was very much the same thing, was one of the things that he held most highly. It was a very communal, everybody owned everything, nobody had any hold on each, like, other in
there's no hierarchy,
very 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 communal and communistic, and I think that's one of the reasons why he was, it was a combination of reasons, but he, as his monastery or his school grew, he also developed a very keen and devoted group of people that hated his guts. A lot of what we know about Pythagoras that's contemporary to him are people that wrote satires making fun of his beliefs and his lifestyle and all that sort of thing. And so that's how we've garnered information about who he actually was, is because that's what survived.
Like, they have to be telling the truth if they're making fun of him.
And just like then, wealthy people did not like the communism idea. It just wasn't a big hit even back then. And the fact that he wouldn't let a lot of like wealthy, important people into his school, they had to do the same thing that everybody else did to get in, that was also quite unpopular.
Yeah.
So, as the story goes, there was this guy that really didn't like him, and I don't know that I wrote down this guy's name, but he went to the neighboring town, the Siberes, went to the next town and got them all riled up about Pythagoras and Croton. And they all went over there and attacked the town. And Pythagoras happened to be in his wife's house. And they were doing one of the rituals or one of the things, whatever, they were a meeting of the main people in the Pythagorean movement. And they set the house on fire. And it's kind of unknown what happened to Pythagoras at this point. Some say that he got out of the fire and he moved on and moved to another part of Italy to live out the rest of his days kind of in seclusion. And the more likely thing is that, you know, he was an old dude at that time and he probably didn't make it out of the house. Most of the people that were in the house didn't make it out of the house. It was one of those, you know, it was kind of one of those planned arson things where they lit everything on fire at once, so it was, you know,
like
kind of
locked
hard.
The doors and stuff.
You know, blocked it off and just kind of lit it up.
Damn.
So
all those dudes get murdered.
Yeah, society hates its truth tellers.
Yeah,
it just really, really does.
Yeah.
But in that time, you know, all of the ideas that he put together form a basis that, you know, our society has borrowed again from for thousands of years. I mean, geometry in itself, the fact that they call it the, you know, Pythagoras theorem, and that's something that everybody knows.
Right.
I mean, that's how he continues to be a household name or whatever. But he also did the harmony of the spheres. He thought that, you know, he developed the system of notes that we have. He did a lot of work with grammar and the alphabet and just wide-ranging climate studies, numerology, a lot of soft sciences and some things that we don't really... But wild.
Back then, it was all pretty soft.
It was all pretty soft. And it was all pretty interconnected.
Yeah.
But he was a mind like the world had really never seen, in the sense that all these other people that we list, with maybe the possible exception of, you know, Homer or somebody like that, who's more of just a storyteller, and it's not. But he was kind of divorced from this mystical enlightenment, and it was very much centered on mathematics and the study of what was going on. But he still it was still to him a religion, but it was this new approach in a way that I think is arguably as influential to us today as the Moses based religions. I mean, the fact that we look at things clinically, and, you know, the idea of that truth and that Greek tradition is hand in hand with our Hebraic tradition today. And
totally.
I think Pythagoras is a big one that put that.
Those are both one of the big pillars of Western society and culture. Okay. The Greeks and then the Abrahamic religions.
And it's weird. The reason why we always kind of think of him as a more than a human being is, you know, several hundred years after he died, the Romans really decided that he was great and kind of deified him. They love to deify people, you know, kind of around, you know, year zero in that first century before and after the switchover from BC to AD, or however you want to look at it.
Was everyone like freaking out like we were during Y2K when it was about to flip over from BC to AD or AD to BC?
No, I don't think. I think they established that quite a ways later on, because it was Jesus
thing.
And nobody knew who Jesus was. It's all based around, you know, Jesus.
So when did they actually start dating? I know this is off topic, but this is always something I've wondered. But like, when did they start dating things AD and BC? Like, how long after the whole Jesus thing were they like, that's a pretty significant event that we could basically construct our entire timeline?
I want to say it's the Gregorian calendar was the beginning of that Jesus.
Those guys were
like
monks,
the center,
right?
Or maybe it was Constantine that they started the counting at that point.
Because it had to be close enough to where they were like, you remember that dude? Or like your grandpa knew that guy or something. You know what I mean?
I feel like it was like 1,000 years
after.
I mean, I think it was a while. Because there's that theory of the missing history. Have you heard that? That like there's a lot of people that believe that there's like 100, 200 years of the Middle Ages that didn't really happen. That people were just trying to synchronize a lot of poorly kept timelines of all these different countries. So they all got kind of put together. And then the kings that were financing this history thought it would be really cool to be king during year 1000. So they like kind of,
grease some wheels, fudge some numbers.
Yeah, kind of crunch some numbers to make it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, as far as Pythagoras goes, I mean, it really does seem like this whole deification and, I don't know, making someone out to be this incredible superhero after they've died, that seems to be one of the cruxes. It's the crux of his story, you know, because anybody could theoretically come along, it seems like, and say it's all made up, kind of.
Yeah.
But same with, you know, prophets too. It's
I think
kind
so.
Of that same You know, there's this whole like journey phase where they're like exploring the world and they're learning, and then they come back to there's the return to their home where they spread the information that they've gained, which it sounds like he definitely did spend time in India, because what is he's like a vegetarian who believes in the wheel of samsara now, you know? And so it's like, yeah, or that souls come back, and those are all Eastern ideas, you know? And and so it does seem like there's this kind of inherent treatment of figures like this who sometimes we call prophets. I don't think there'd be any, maybe there was a time period where Pythagoras was called a prophet, but he, you know, he isn't really now, but he kind of has that same sort of timeline, and he's also disputed in much of the same way that a prophet would be. You know, there's plenty of people who are like, ah, well, fucking,
oh, I mean, Moses, know. I mean, maybe he didn't exist there. They like to say that there. I mean, Homer maybe didn't exist,
but so, that's the cool thing about this guy is like Pythagoras existed, right?
I think they're pretty sure that he existed. Guy. Yeah. There are, you know, obviously the contemporary reports, like there's, you know, a pretty reliable, I don't remember where he was from, somewhere near where Pythagoras grew up, and they have considerable writings of this guy that are pretty unremarkable, other than the fact that he thinks that Pythagoras was a charlatan and constantly is making
calling
comment.
Him out.
Yeah.
But that means that he was a guy.
He was a guy that existed. Maybe he was a charlatan, though. I mean, that seems to be like the general contemporary.
It does, doesn't it?
Consensus on him that he was just kind of
but that math shit is pretty good.
Shit is pretty cool.
That's,
but I think the math shit was like something that like the general public didn't know was going on. I mean, that was part of his school, that like you got to see the theorems and the proofs of all of that sort of thing, and they do think that he was the first one to proof that
A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Right.
And that's a significant thing, which that also seems weird, because the proof of that is so pretty simple, you know, to figure out that that's true. Yeah. You can just kind of use cutouts and kind of figure it out. You know, that's how they showed me in junior high or whatever, the proof of it. So I kind of even doubt that that is something that he did for the first time. I really think that there's a lot of folks that want to give him something, you know?
Sure. The whole music of the spheres thing, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And if he codified music, I mean, that's a significant thing. I mean, he did some significant stuff if he was...
Well, even if he just spread knowledge that he learned from elsewhere to other people and then just spent a lifetime thinking about it more and then trying to expand on it, like, you know, that's still a massive accomplishment.
Sure.
You know?
And it's interesting though that he has, I guess it makes sense that he is ranked just right where he needs to be, that he's not quite that level.
He's not a Plato.
But see, Plato was the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, because Plato kind of took everything from Socrates, you know, and Pythagoras. I mean, Plato was kind of this person that he established the university, and like that was kind of his contribution. And there were some other things, obviously, that he did, but a lot of that stuff is all conversations that, you know, he transcribed of Socrates having. And Socrates was really the one that didn't write anything down that was the super influential one, but he didn't like Pythagoras at all, other than that the soul was immortal. That was the only thing that Socrates
thought. What they agreed on?
That was what they agreed on.
Not A squared plus B squared equals C squared?
I don't know that Socrates was aware of the mathematics side of things, because that was one of the secrets of the school.
Huh.
Right. I don't think you can really argue with A squared plus B squared plus C squared. Right. But again, that wasn't what Pythagoras was known for at the time. He was like this far edge, free love, hippie sort.
He was a weird, like, culty kind of guy.
Kind of the first of the free love commune dudes ever.
Hey, man, he went to India.
It
he
really
dropped some acid. You
he
know?
Really was kind of the first hippie ever.
Damn.
So, I mean, I think that is maybe how we should start thinking about him. Kind of breathe some juice back into that Pythagoras myth.
The first ever hippie. No, let's not do that to his name, to his... Let's not besmirch his character in such a way. But yeah, it does kind of sound like he's...
He did all the things. Commie. He did all the things.
Yeah. Yeah, he believes in...
First, I mean, he went to India. Transmigration of souls. He left for a while, came back, thought his hometown sucked. So he went to, like, you know, the beach in Italy.
Yeah.
And started a commune. Married a super younger woman and shared everything with everybody.
Damn.
And then died in a house fire.
Sounds like a hippie, yeah.
Yeah, sounds like a house fire. Yeah. No, it doesn't sound like a house. It does sound like a house fire, but it also sounds like a hippie.
Sounds like a house fire to me. That should be a saying.
I think we'll make it a sound. Let's make it a saying.
Yeah,
that'll be one of our podcast sayings. It sounds like a house fire.
And that's gonna mean when something sounds like such a great time, like a dangerously good time. You know
sounds
what I mean?
Like a house fire.
Sounds like a house fire to me.
I think that's gonna catch.
I do too.
That's
you magic. Always have to say it with the accent though. You gotta say sounds like a house fire.
Sounds
to me.
Like a house fire. Have you heard, speaking of the accent, have you heard the ads for Slayer? Like when they play a Slayer song on, what's the Pandora?
Uh-huh.
There's like Slayer.
There's ads that come on? No, I haven't heard.
There's like one of the guys from Slayer comes on and does like this promo. You know, like how like I'm Tom Petty and I really hope you buy my new album. You know, like how that used to happen on the radio.
Yeah, but it's
Slayer. And he's got kind of this weird,
they're all from California.
It's not like a California accent. It's like, hi, I'm Gus from Slayer, and I want you to come on down and see my show coming up. It's going to be a rocking good time. It sounds like Charlie Daniels or something.
They're from Huntington Beach.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't understand it, but it sounded like super like something off of like AM radio, like
weird.
Country AM radio where they're doing that promo spot.
Like, I mean, I feel like
I'm
Kerry
George
King.
Strait and you're listening to 107.5.
Yeah. I feel like Kerry King could have a southern accent that he's adopted from years of just being in Slayer.
maybe.
I'm Kerry King. I'm Kerry King, and I will cut off my beard and send it to you in the mail if you help me put my kids through college.
It did not sound like that. It did not sound that tough. It was very, like...
It was like, huh?
Shade tree.
I'm Kerry King.
Shade tree mechanic. I'm from Slayer, and I'd like you to come down and see my show.
I'm from Slayer.
Gonna be our last show ever, because we're gonna be breaking up. Y'all gonna be all moving
back. We're gonna be breaking up, but don't tell anyone we're actually not breaking up. We're gonna come back in 2 years.
We're just doing it to sell a bunch of albums. Don't tell.
Okay, well, I feel like this is a solid segue into our upcoming segment. Segue.
Yes, I'm going to inflict a song of the past on Spencer.
Oh, yay.
Once again.
Inflicting a song upon me.
I believe this is one that he's probably heard. I mean, it's just one that you kind of pick up.
I like the last
through
one
osmosis.
A lot. I like the last
this
one.
This is going to kind of test the limits. Okay. You know, I'm not. That was the last one was a little bit, you know, something that I thought that you
figured
would,
I would like it.
Kind of had some things that I knew that you would appreciate to it.
Okay.
This one is going to be more in like my wheelhouse, and we're going to kind of see.
It's a
little yacht rock.
Okay, cool.
But we're going to do a little bit of a listen, and then we're going to do a little talk about the song Lowdown by Boz Scaggs from 1976. So me and Spencer are going to take a little break and enjoy the hell out of that.
Then
we'll be back to have nothing a chat about it.
Nothing you ain't got. Put your money on the table and drive it off the lot. Turn on that old love light. Turn a maybe to a yes. Same old schoolboy game got you into this mess. Hey, son, better get on back to town. Face the sad old truth, the dirty
love.
All right,
so we're back. That was Boz Scaggs' Lowdown. What is your lowdown, Spencer? What do you think?
Wow. Man.
It's a little overwhelming. It's so smooth that you're almost
that
lulled
was very
off into
smooth.
A coma of
what? Yeah,
70s storytelling and
yeah. Well, first of all, that bass line was. I was surprised I didn't really like get sick of it or anything, considering it was playing.
It's pretty
it's
much
a, it's a good bass line, though.
It is. It is.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hate it or anything. Like with this kind of music, it's hard for me. Like I really have to like remove myself and like transport my brain back to the time when this hasn't been like parodied and doesn't have all these like, you know what I mean? Like,
right?
You know, like social attachments. Well, at least for me, like, of like, yeah, like sleazy like blaxploitation movies and like, oh, you're gonna go buy a dime sack. Well, you better be careful,
but
baby.
That
like,
is kind of
what it
know?
Is. No,
I mean that's also what was going on culturally, like
right.
at the time.
No, I know. I just it reflects that well, but I feel like I have just some sort of like it's trying. It has this edge, you know. He's talking like, "What happened to that girl?"
Right.
You know, like, who put these ideas in her head and mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's probably talking about some very serious issues, like, "Oh, now she's like a prostitute, or she's like doing drugs now, or something."
Right.
You know, but then the music is so like so not what I would associate with. It's just like walking down a sunny. Like beachside.
This song
walkway.
Has a weird history in the sense that it was never released. Well, Boss Gags, I don't know what you know about Boss Gags.
Not much.
Not a whole lot. I don't really know a whole lot, but he was originally the guitarist and sometimes singer of the Steve Miller Band in the 60s.
Okay.
And released this album and never meant to release this as a single. And I guess a DJ somewhere, because this was back in the days where like DJs could kind of play songs that they liked, you know, not mm-hmm. what was just told to
right.
them. And this DJ in Cleveland or somewhere decided this was a great song and started playing it on his show. And it caught on and it got to like number three. Biggest song. I think it's the biggest song that he ever had. Mm. Kind of cemented his career for the rest of his life, because I mean, it won the Grammy for Best Soul Song in 1976.
Really?
Yeah. Which is some, you know.
Soul, really?
What? Yeah. What do they call that? Whitewashing. That's some whitewashing of the Grammys right there.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But it was, I mean, especially in 1976, there was a lot of soul coming out in 1976. For Boss Skaggs to win,
no,
you know, that's like Oof. Making Kenny Loggins like best metal band of 1988 or something like that. That would be a travesty.
Well, they did Jethro Tull won the
they
first
did,
ever
dude.
Metal Grammy.
Yeah. That was an amazing thing.
They beat Metallica. Yeah.
So. Jethro fucking Tull.
Yeah.
Nobody
so
had listened to that
years.
Album at all. Like that album
right.
in my world existed not at all until they won the Grammy. I mean, that was a surprise that like they Jethro Tull
like,
still around?
Yeah, who is
you know,
that?
Like, I saw that album when I would go through album bins, but I don't know who they are.
Yeah. Man, that's messed up.
But one thing, and to defend the song, I believe that, like, the vocal is very expertly done. I believe that the guitar is really quite interesting all the way through. I mean, the guitar solo is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's... there's just several in those yacht rock things where they kind of, I don't know how they, what it is about those. They're kind of disjointed sounding, but they totally work. It kind of reminds me of the guitar solo on Peg. And the guys playing in this song are all members of Toto later on.
Oh,
so
really?
That's kind of the yacht rock connection.
Yeah.
And it's co-written by one of the members of Toto,
okay.
Boss Gags. And, The things that kind of make me cringe a little bit is that disco break where,
right.
you know, there is no bridge, but they have that disco break that they keep going to.
Yeah.
And
I liked the chord progression during that section.
Yeah.
Like I realized how it was like a serious cliche, but I like the chords that they're playing during that section.
Right.
Like if
right.
you were just to put those in a vacuum. Be like, that's a good chord progression, and that's the only thing that saves that section,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah,
But yeah, I don't know. I liked it, and it is very evocative of like a place and a time.
Right. Time if you come place. At it with the right mental attitude,
yeah.
It's a really kind of cool song. But yeah. If you don't, it kind of is like a combination of Saturday Night Fever and Austin Powers.
Yeah, totally.
And it can really grate on you that way. But I think if you really listen to the words, like you say, the words are really dark and really like streetwise. And he delivers a really cool vocal performance on it, you know.
And honestly, this sound is like coming back in a big way. Like in that, I think a lot of rappers and current pop artists are digging through like the, you know, late 70s, mm-hmm. early 80s mm-hmm. sounds of like this yacht rock phenomenon.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, Thundercat put out that song with Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald's all over the place now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I got tickets to see him when I got to see him because, man, they're going to get spending next time. He's not going to be playing the casino next time he comes through because he's, like, all over the radio and stuff. I mean, because I follow him. He actually, Michael McDonald follows me on Twitter.
What?
It's weird. Yeah.
Man, that must have been a low point in Michael McDonald's life.
He follows me on Twitter. I made some posts, you know, like, when I went to see him and, like, because I kind of, like, was involved with the yacht rock community a little bit, or I was trying to, because all those dudes are on Twitter, and I liked to harass them for a few months there.
Sure.
And I would see Michael McDonald, so I put something up about that, and like seriously, like a week later, Michael McDonald followed me on Twitter. Yeah, which is really sad because I don't do anything interesting on Twitter. But I think Michael McDonald also, and I follow him on Facebook. He's one of those guys that like posts like pictures sideways and stuff, so it could have been a slip of the fan. I mean, he's got pretty skilled fingers because I mean he's a hell of a piano player, but he could have just accidentally piano played me an accident into his follow list.
Maybe he's just trying to solidify your super fandom and
maybe. Oh, you did. It's done. I'm super fan. So let's say overall, what would you give it?
Overall, I would give it a solid B minus.
B minus, really?
Yeah.
You're gonna give the mumble thrash a B plus, and you're giving this one a B minus.
Oh yeah, but that's really? that's just based on my personal taste.
Wow.
Yeah. The mumble thrash that.
Mumble Thrash gets a B plus, and Boz Scaggs Lowdown gets B plus.
Because I mean, I don't even.
I'm gonna give it a solid A.
Wow.
I'm gonna give it an A. See? Maybe A minus, but like right up there. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
And I don't give out A's.
That's why I was surprised.
I give it an A.
I feel like you're giving it extra high one because you were surprised. By
I believe
love.
That
B minus isn't bad.
Just for the fact that that riff of this song is a riff that stands on the level of I Can't Get No Satisfaction, or it's one of the great American rock riffs. That if
See,
you play
I
that,
don't, I don't dun, know. Dun, if dun, I would,
dun, 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 dun. Yeah,
I
it's
know
everybody
I
knows
that.
Everybody knows
I don't know
that
about
riff.
That.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's good.
I mean, it's instantly recognizable. Like it or don't like it, like that riff is known.
Yeah.
By everyone,
yeah.
Whether you know it, the song, or whether you don't know this song, you know this song, and that's something that is hard to do.
That is hard to do.
And I super love yacht rock and smooth music from the 70s.
Standing the test of time.
I'm going to put my personal thing in there, too. So probably a B+.
B+, altogether.
Super objective. But, like, if I'm putting in my personal preferences, I give it an A.
Okay. Yeah.
I give it
an A. I feel like we should take our personal preferences into account.
Oh, I think so, too.
Because, you know, it's like if I judged it on what he intended to do, yeah, A+.
Right.
Because he executed his vision in a successful way, you know. So, that,
yeah.
But if I mean,
well,
that's,
I mean,
me,
like
that's
I think that disco break. I mean, I think there's a couple problems with it. Like I think the bass line, it never changes up in an interesting way, really, and that's kind of a problem. It's a filler track. you can kind of tell that it's like not meant to be.
They
like
jam
the
for a while.
It's,
they just kind of jam it.
Absolutely,
on it. Yeah.
It's an album track, you know. And for that, it's a great, great album track. Like if this, you know, it's just like the one of the B side. If it's a, this is a really, really high level B side.
Right, which is why it gets a B minus.
Yeah, all right. I think a B plus overall.
B plus.
Gonna give it, I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it an A. I'm going to give it a solid A.
Right.
I think. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Pythagoras and the music of the spheres and Boz Scaggs.
Boz Scaggs and
which,
the music
what kind
of the spheres.
Of, what kind of name is Boz?
Boz. Bosley. I think it's a short for Bosley. Okay,
if it is, that makes it a little better.
You can look. Do you want to look him up and see like what his real full name? I bet you Wikipedia.
Boz.
Maybe
B-O-Z.
He was named Boz. Bosevis.
Bosevis.
That's a name from the Bible.
No, his name is William Royce Scaggs.
William Royce Scaggs.
Yeah.
Boz.
And Boz just crept its way in there somehow. Because he's like a boss, but it's like a boss.
Wasn't there a football player, like the who? He had like a flat top, and he played for like college, but he was just too crazy. Brian Bosworth. Yeah, that's before your time. But yeah, he was like the super bad boy football player that kind of, he changed football. There's a ESPN documentary about him, if you ever watch those, that 30 and Under. Those are great documentaries, even if you don't like sports.
Dude, but this picture I'm looking at of Boz Scaggs right now, it's the one where he's in like this pink suit thing.
Yeah.
He looks like his face has been like poured, like he looks like a mannequin. He looks like his face was poured into a mold. And he's just sitting there with these like dead mannequin eyes. It's creeping me out.
Yeah. They say, you know, that video killed the radio star. And Boz Scaggs was probably one of the people that they're talking about. That he was a lot of people just kind of lost their career in that late 70s thing, you know. And he just was not going to translate into the TV
the visual world
real well. You know, but he was kind of like a visionary as far as like Miami Vice styles went.
Yeah. If he had anything in to do with shaping that sound that I just heard, that is like a, like an archetypal, like that is a perfect, I hear that kind of thing in so many movie soundtracks. And
if you love yacht rock, that is one of the greatest yacht rock songs out there. I mean, that's right up there with like What a Fool Believes and a few other ones that are just like the most yacht rocky songs that you're going to get. I mean, it's got Toto playing in classics.
I feel like I need to be walking down the beach in an open button-down Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah. I just don't know that you have it in you. I don't think you do.
I think I think you need this like inherent like levity. And like,
I think you're physically capable of listening to it, but I don't think that you're ready to. I don't think you're there yet.
I'm not ready.
No, it's a level that you haven't reached.
I haven't reached.
I don't know if it's a,
or maybe I haven't sunk into.
I don't know which one that is, but it's definitely one that you're not prepared for. No. You're not prepared for it.
I'm not. Well, I mean, I can.
I almost
appreciate
did James
it.
Ingram, but I don't think you're ready for James Ingram.
I don't even know who that is, but I mean, I could. I can really highly appreciate it, but I can't. It's hard for me to listen to it and not like kind of chuckle. You know what I mean?
Well, no, that's part of the enjoyment of it.
Okay.
I mean, that's.
Well, then,
I mean,
then I do
chuckle.
Like it. Yeah, okay.
Oh yeah.
It's just like,
no, I despise this kind of music when I was younger, and that's one of the reasons
why I love it so much now.
Is that it is like, but it's quality. It's quality.
It is quality.
It is
all those
quality,
musicians. There were two
great,
drum sets going
great
on.
Great songwriting.
That was cool.
Fantastic. In so many levels. And it still at times makes me cringe, like, oh, what the fuck am I listening to? And that's kind of fun. You know, it kind of like in the way that like it finds it. You asked me a couple episodes ago if I found a certain song unsettling. And this song, sometimes I find unsettling.
That,
I'm like, oh, God, who am I now?
So
what am I doing?
This song is more unsettling than that song we were listening to.
I have
to
an I can get an unsettled feeling from this, like to be like, I'm enjoying this song way more than I probably, like, young me would think I was a fucking jackass.
But, okay, yeah. Wow.
But I don't care because, like, I really enjoy what I enjoy.
And you shouldn't,
you know? Yeah. No man tells me what songs I'm going to enjoy, not even younger me.
You know what? Who that's like, probably? Who? Pythagoras.
Pythagoras.
I bet no one could tell with that dude what to listen to.
No, that fucker was
He was just out listening to, like, hammer on anvil music. Clang, 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 clang.
Well, I think he also did a little flute, probably.
Oh, a little flute in there with a flute, with little hammer and anvil.
Clang and bang and flute.
A little clang and bang.
Yeah. No, I think that Pythagoras would have loved, I would have loved some
you think
smooth
Pythagoras
music.
Pythagoras would have loved Boss Skaggs.
I really do. I really do.
Well, I don't think we can end it on any higher of a note than that.
Yeah, that feels right. That feels right to me.
That feels good.
Pythagoras would have loved Boss Skaggs.
And we'll chalk that up to another rousing episode of Idiots.
Even though it's only a B minus or whatever.
Yeah. I thought we settled on B plus.
Well, not for Spencer. It's a Spencer B
minus. Yeah, it's a B minus.
As a hard minus.
We're talking like teetering on a C.
Me and Pythagoras would have both given it an A.
I don't know about that. I think Pythagoras would have seen it as...
Oh, that double drum kit. Pythagoras would have given it an A.
I don't know.
Sure.
He would have been like, yes, pedantic and derivative. No, I don't know. Those are just two, like, those are like the perfect...
I don't think things could be... I don't think things could be derivative at that time. Because, like, they were just coming up with all of it for the first time.
No, they were just stealing it
directly
from the source.
They had just written down laws. I mean, like, seriously, like, right around the time that he was, like, you know, a baby. They were writing down laws for the first time.
That's true.
So, I mean, it was kind of... A lot of it was fresh. So, I don't think he would have said it was derivative. He would have been really excited that
you're
listening to a magic
there.
Man sing out of a box.
Is this probably. Man making all of these sounds at once?
Right, right.
No.
He would have been amazed.
Yeah.
And electric instruments, he would have been pretty into that too.
Okay, fine.
So
fine.
A.
I can
Me and
see.
Pythagoras, both A.
I can see.
So B minus
and
two
Pythagoras
A's.
Is also
it
seen
is now...
as just a complete hack now. He is a...
All right.
Okay.
Well, that's been Idiots Discuss the Universe for tonight. I'm Craig.
And I'm Spencer. And have a happy night.
Whatever. Do what you want to do.
'Discuss the Universe' is recorded in IDTU Studios, located in Portland, Oregon. All opinions and commentary has been carefully researched by the technicians and scholars of IDTU Research Academy, and therefore should be greeted with healthy skepticism and disbelief. No idiots were harmed during the making of this podcast.